Welcome to the fourth edition of The Wolf Whistle. This week I'm joined by former Wolf striker, another striker, three out of four now we've had, another striker, Dean Edwards, 30 appearances for Wolves, four as sub, 10 goals. Dean, welcome to The Wolf Whistle.
Hi, Jase.
How are you, mate?
Well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Dean, I really wanted you on. I know you personally, you're a really good mate. More than that, your story's quite Roy the Rovers, which makes it really, really interesting. So we'll roll it all the way back to when you first started, obviously, playing in Wolverhampton. So I believe you was born very close to the ground, wasn't you, Dean?
Yeah, well, basically, I don't know if everybody knows Wolverhampton. There's a block of flats, a Phil Parks goal kick away from Molyneux.
Right.
And it was a Phil Parks goal kick. He could punch them quite a lot. And yeah, I was born there, and I stayed there till I was about 5 years old.
Okay.
It was a great place. The only problem was I was on the third floor. If I'd have been on the 10th floor, I'd have been able to watch into the Molyneux.
Oh, no way.
But yeah, the third floor, all I could do was listen to the roar and make my mind up.
And when you was young, did you used to go and watch the Wolves?
Yeah, I think I went to my first game when I was about 6 years old. I always remember it. My father, I was playing downstairs, and my dad come and got me and said, "I'm taking to the match today, Wolves Man United." I think it was 1968. I do believe it. I think it was 0-0. If I'm honest,
right.
I can't remember too much. I was a 6 year old kid. I remember my dad took me, and I was a Man United fan. I was a plastic man.
Flipping
at 6 years old.
It's getting worse. We have to pause this now.
Yeah, and he took me down to the ground, and I don't know for the older people that listen to this, there used to be a rosette man outside the Wolves changing rooms. And my dad said to me, he said, right, you want a rosette? And I said, I'll have a Man United one. He went, you better pay for it yourself then. Six, I ain't buying you that. And I ended up having a Wolves one. And we went in the South Bank, and it was just incredible. I mean, everybody's got a story about their first ever game. But I remember going up the concourse and then up the steps. And then as you come down onto the South Bank, it just seemed massive to a six-year-old kid. And you just look out onto the pitch and you see the green and the reds and the gold, all gold and black. And it was just phenomenal. My dad put me on his shoulders. And in the old days, there was no health and safety. And
yeah. We'd
sway backwards and forwards. And there'd be, you know, urine running down the back of people's legs and
nice.
People smoking on the terraces. And it was just brilliant. Smell of hot dogs and that.
And did you ever think that you'd one day play on that pitch? I mean, I know it was early days then. But was it, as you was growing up, was it a dream to play for Wolves?
Well, I think everybody who's born in Wolverhampton, it's their dream to play on the Molyneux, you know,
yeah.
At any stage, whether it be a Sunday League Cup final, whether it be an FA Cup semi-final, you know, you just want to get on there. I mean, you see all your heroes running about the place and you think, you know, one day that'll be me wearing the number 9 or the number 10 or the number 2. You know, you just wanted to pull that gold shirt on and get on that pitch.
So who were some of the players that you obviously used to revere and watch from the South Bank?
Yeah, well, my first ever memory of an hero was Hugh Curran.
Yeah.
It's funny how your mind plays tricks on you, but I did go to the Man United game. The next game I remember, we played Norwich City, and I always remember it because they were supposed to play in the yellow and they're playing the white away kit. And I was in the North Bank that time, and I remember Hugh Curran scoring an overhead kick, and then it just clicked that, you know, I'd seen the crowd go up, and that just made me want to be a centre forward then.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, they all jumped on him and he was the hero, and I thought, you know, I could never envisage being a fullback or a winger or a centre-back.
Had to be a striker.
Had to be a striker, yeah. That was what it was all about.
Some of the strikers at the club that time, obviously John Richards. I mean, what was he like to watch?
Well, John Richards, you know, for me, he was my ultimate hero. You know, I get on really well with Steve Bull. He's a good mate of mine. But, you know, I just don't think there is a comparison. You know, John did it at the top level. I know Steve scored for England.
Yeah.
And, you know, the lads at Torquay used to say to me, oh, you love Bully and all this kind of stuff. And I said, I do, he's a great player, you know. And I thought he was great for the Wolves in the time that we were coming out the Ashes. But
yeah.
John Richards was like the king. You know, the goals I've seen him score, you know, against Millwall in the FA Cup 6th round where he just flew past the defender and, you know, put it in the net. And against Man United, against Liverpool, you know, Arsenal. I've seen him score goals that were like phenomenal. And one of my greatest memories of playing football at any level When I was at Wolves, I got invited to play in a five-a-side competition
yep.
at East Park with John Richards, Phil Parks, John McCall, Jeff Palmer. And I played up front with John.
That was the best Wolves team you ever played.
That is the best Wolves team I've ever played in. And somebody threw the ball out to John. He chested it down to me and I scored. And I thought, bloody hell, I just can't. Sorry about the language there.
Hey, don't worry.
I just thought, wow, this is John Richards. He was my ultimate hero.
No, I mean, so obviously that officially then not your debut for Wolves, but obviously you started at Shrewsbury Town, so you got spotted as a youngster playing. So what were some of the Parks pitches that you played on in Wolverhampton?
Well, when I was 15, you know, I went and played for a team called Pendyford Old Boys. And there was, you know, I mean, the Wolverhampton Sunday League in them days were like, it was worse than going into a war zone on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, everyone's still off cut, aren't they?
Everybody's still steaming drunk and, you know, they'd be kicking, take you out at the thigh and take you out round the back of the neck.
Yeah.
and, you know, you had to learn your trade there, to be fair, as a lot of pros do, you know. And I always remember this one game, our centre-half, this lad, the right winger, went in for an innocuous tackle on this centre-half and basically took him out at the knee and his leg completely snapped. And I thought, whoa, it was a real tough.
Yeah.
But I was 15 at the time. I mean, I was built like a gypsy's dog. There was any bones and whatever, you know, but I'd just get under, you know, fly past them or go, they'd be trying to side me down. And I just was playing as you do as a kid, 15, carefree. I was just, you know, and scoring goals. And I think Notts Forest came in for me with Brian Clough and I was still at the Wolves doing two nights a week on a Tuesday and a Thursday. There was Wayne Clark up there. And then, obviously, I was getting towards the end of school age. And Joe Gardner said to me, I said to him, you know, what's the chance of being taken on? And he went, just keep coming along. And then one of my mates had gone to Shrewsbury. And he called me and said, oh, I'm at Shrewsbury at the moment. I said, oh, so have you got there? And he said, oh, I wrote in for a trial. So I couldn't see anything coming with Wolves, so I wrote in for a trial, went to Shrewsbury, had a game against the Welsh under-18s, and scored, although they played me in midfield, which I wasn't too keen on.
Yeah.
And then they invited me back the next week. They said, we've got a game in the Midland Intermediate League. So I went back on the Wednesday, but on the Tuesday night, I trained with Wolves. And in my naivety, I didn't even ask who we were playing. Anyway, when I got to the ground, I said, who have we got? And he said, we're playing Wolves today. And I went, oh, really? I've been training with them the night before.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went out and scored. When I went out to warm up, Joe Gardner came up to me and said, what are you playing at? I said, well, you haven't offered me anything. I said, I'm going to have a game for Shrewsbury today. I played against Wolves and scored. We drew one each.
Brilliant.
And then in those days, remember, and now I'm feeling really old, they didn't have texts and Facebook and all the social media stuff that you can get in touch with somebody.
You had pigeons,
Actually, it was a telegram.
Yeah.
And the next day, I had a telegram off the Wolves offering me a 2-year apprenticeship.
Was this 1924, Dean?
Just a bit before that.
So a telegram?
I had a telegram, yeah, saying, you know, we would like to offer you a 2-year contract, but Shrewsbury had already signed me on the day before.
Right.
So that was that. I went to Shrewsbury.
Was you a little bit, obviously, Wolves being your club, was you a bit early doors then, what might have been, you know, I'm signing for Shrewsbury, I could have had my chance at Wolves, this could be the only time I could ever play for Wolves and it's gone, or was you really focused on Shrewsbury and think, you know what, I'll prove Wolves wrong?
Yeah, I just thought, you know, I want to play football and I want to be somewhere where I'm going to get a chance. And,
yeah.
You know, I looked at the Wolves, obviously John Reed, I'm thinking to myself now, if I go to Wolves, I've got to replace John Richards. And I'm thinking, that's like replacing a Ford Focus with a Ferrari, you know, you just couldn't envisage it. So, you know, obviously at Shrewsbury, I'd only got to replace Steve Biggins.
Right.
And I thought that would have been an easier option.
There was every chance. I mean, so Shrewsbury, so you had a 2-year YTS, I take it.
2-year YTS. And to be honest with you, my rise was phenomenal. I didn't think how well it could have gone. I got recommended for the England under-18s by Graham Turner.
Was Graham Turner the manager then?
Graham Turner was manager at Shrewsbury, yeah. I went to a couple of trials and there was good players around by like then Mark Aitley and people like that.
Yeah.
And basically I started really well. I was scoring goals every game for the Intermediate League, and in them days the Intermediate was good. They had the likes of Stoke and Notts Forest, they had Fashanu and Lee Chapman and Steve Bold. I mean, Adrian Heath, West Brom had, you know, people like Statham was playing in it. There was lots of good players around there.
I did say this, that now, obviously the reserves now effectively is the under-23s, and you don't get many first-team players really. You know, you get the odd one dipping in and out. But back then, the reserve leagues were very, very strong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you wasn't in the first team by the time you were 18, you weren't going to get in a team.
Really?
You know, I don't understand the under-23s, if I'm honest with you. If you're not in the first team by the time you're 22, 21, I mean, there's a problem, isn't there? I think so, in any case.
There is.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, look, Shrewsbury was a great club. Really, really well-run, well-organised, and it still is a good club. And I went there. Apprentice, clean the terraces, clean the boots.
Yeah.
Had some great characters there, Ken Mullern and Jake King and people like that.
The old Gay Meadow as well.
The old Gay Meadow, yeah. Yeah. I don't think they could be called that now, to be honest.
No. It's the old LGBT.
Yeah. But it was great. There was two apprentices. We always used to clean the terraces. But the good thing is that in those days you could train with the first team. Whereas now to train with the first team, you've got to be quite decent. In them days, it was like, you know, you train with the first team, so you had to make up the first team half the time. But yeah, I went from strength to strength. I made my debut against the Zambian national team. They came over on tour.
You can't count that as an international appearance, do you?
No, I can't. But the one thing I could count in that day was Bobby Charlton made his very last game in England.
Right.
He played for us at Shrewsbury, he guested. I played up front, Bobby Charlton in midfield.
Don't tell me you scored.
I didn't, actually. Ugh. But I couldn't score because he was giving me that much stick. I couldn't concentrate.
No way.
I came out onto the pitch and I thought, Bobby Charlton, 1966 World Cup winner. What am I going to do here? And all of a sudden he, get on that, you little... You know, and I thought, oh, God, you know, he's off
already. So he was treating it like a proper game.
He was treating it properly.
Yeah.
And he was slaughtering me. You know, slaughtering. And I was a 16-year-old kid. Anyway, when we come off, he was, you know, he was great. And I took a few bits of memorabilia from that game, and then that was that. And then about 17, I mean, you've got to remember in those days as well, and we, you know, it's harping back to the past, but there was only one sub.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you got in the squad, you'd done well.
I mean, look at the squads now, the first team, on any given club, really, on match day, there's 18 players involved, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, if I'd had five subs like they do now, I'd have probably made 1,000 appearances. But most of the time, I was 13th man, and I used to carry the kit off the coach and travel with the first
team. Those days now are gone, aren't they? I mean, I don't know even if the apprentices now even clean boots.
But They're not allowed to now. They're not allowed to even sweep terraces. I know when we was at Torquay, we made one of the lads clean the terrace, and his dad come up the ground. I said, why are you making my son clean terrace? I said, because it'll be good for his grounding. He went, my son don't clean terraces.
Wow.
And that's the difference.
Did his son make the first
team? No.
Right.
No. And I think that answers all the questions there.
I mean, that really was your apprenticeship to life. So when did you make your league debut, Dean? And what sort of clubs was you playing? Because it was the old Championship then, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, it was the first year I got there. We got promoted at the what is now League One. We won it. And then we went into the Championship, and then there was teams like Chelsea, Watford, Leicester, Notts County was even in it then. They were now in the National League.
Yeah.
There were some big sides in it. And
so what grounds was you playing at? So did you play at Stamford Bridge?
I didn't play at Stamford Bridge, but I'll come on to that story in a minute. But the first I played at Upton Park.
Oh, yeah.
They just won the FA Cup, 1980. It was 1981. And I played up front, and the marking me that day was Alvin Martin and Billy Bonds.
Flipping heck. Two legends.
Yeah, and Trevor Brooking played, David Cross, Paul Goddard.
So was you almost pinching yourself because, you know, you've been in the Shrewsbury youth team, and next thing you know, because football, this is how it changes and happens so quickly. Next thing you know, you're playing in the first team at Upton Park against people you've been watching on telly win FA Cups.
Yeah, you do. I mean, like you say, I'm looking at Trevor Brooking and I'm thinking, well, I watched him play against Yugoslavia and smash one in the top stanchion. And you know, the first 5 minutes, I've got above Billy Bonds and headed it and it's hit the crossbar. And you think to yourself, these ain't as good as you think they are. You know, you think they're just normal people.
Yeah.
But I think on the day they were just a better team than us. They beat us 3-0. And Trevor Brooking never moved out the centre circle. He just sprayed it. He was putting backspin on the ball and knocking it 5 yards, knocking it 50 yards, and he was just different class. And coming off, he just tapped me on the head and went, well done, son. He said, you had a good game today.
Wow.
And that was it. We came off, and, like, you know, you walk, run out of Upton Park in front of 25,000, and it is. It's like you say, every kid who makes a debut in that type of level, it must be phenomenal.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, it backfired on me a little bit, and this is where it started to go a bit wrong. I'd scored against Bristol City, scored against Burnley, and then we played Chelsea away, Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
And I'm buzzing. I think I've got Stamford Bridge here, Mickey Droy, Steve Wicks, two giants, and here's me, 8'6", thinking, you know, I'm going to take them on. And
yeah.
So the team sheet gets put up. I have a look. Edwards not on there. And I'm thinking, oh, well. So all of a sudden, as a naive 17, 18-year-old, you've got all the older lads winding you up. I wouldn't have that. Get in and see the boss.
Yeah.
And I go, do you think so?
Do you think so?
Definitely get in and see him. I wouldn't have that. I'd be putting in a transfer request. And I'm getting in my mind now. I'm thinking, yeah, they're right.
How old are you at this point, Dave?
I'm 18.
So you're going to go and tell the manager's Graham Turner?
Yeah, I'm telling Graham Turner, listen, Graham.
Telling him straight,
You're not having, you don't know what you're doing, mate.
Yeah, good idea.
You've got to be playing me against Steve Wicks and Mickey Droy. And I knocked the door. And little unknown to me, all the lads are in the other room listening. And I've gone in and I said, boss, I'm not happy. He went, what are you on about? I said, look, I scored a couple of goals recently. I said, I think I've done well and you've left me out. He went, yeah, he said, it's a tough game tomorrow. I'm going to defend. He said, we've got to try and nick a point and blah, blah, blah. I said, that ain't enough to do with me. I said, I need to be playing. And he's like, okay. I said, I'm thinking of putting a transfer request in.
Oh, no.
And he's gone, okay. He said, well, look, I can't talk to you now. Come in and see me Monday. So I've gone out and the lads are going, well done, Dino, well done. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'll show him. So they've gone to Chelsea, got beat 3-1 on the Monday. I've got my transfer request. And I'm thinking, not the greatest move, you know, when you think about it. And I've gone into him. I said, right, Graham. He went, what do you want? I said, I had a word with you Friday about my transfer. And he went, hang on a minute. He's opened his drawer. He must have been ready for me. He's opened his drawer. He got my contract. And he went, rip it up. And I went, I don't think you can do that. He said, well, you don't want to be here. I went, yeah, I said, I know that. I said, but, he went, out, but a bit stronger than that.
Yeah.
And I went out, and I don't think he spoke to me for about 3-6 months. He just played me in the kids and the reserves. And
so then you was literally nowhere near the first team?
Nowhere near the first team. He literally bombed me out completely. And
wow.
You know what, fair play. Looking back, I deserved it.
I mean, you know, I was laughing then when you said, you know, well, they're all winding you up. And it is funny and it's banter, but that backfired massively.
Oh, without a doubt. And it ruined my career there, to be fair. I believe that. I mean, it's funny because we had a Wolves do about, remember, I think it was a couple of Christmases ago when Graham was there and the lads was asking him why he got rid of him. And I never did. And, you know, I'd love to have the conversation with Graham. And I'm sure that was a big part of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously, I had some great times there. 4 years, they won the championship, the League One. And they were good days, but it ended, and it wasn't my last confrontation with Graham. So you know.
Right. Well, we'll come back to that because, I mean, I don't want to call it a decline, but you almost went into an abyss. You went to Finland, then you sort of ended up at Telford.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the experience in Finland like, and how did you end up at Telford?
Well, Graham come to me and he said, look, he said, there's a team in Finland, won't you? Their season runs from March to September. And it was around the March time and my contract was coming to an end. I'd had a 2.5-year contract, I think. And he said, do you want to go out to Finland? And I said, I'd never even heard of it. I mean, you know, the only way I knew about geography was when you got the fixtures out at the beginning of the season. You look on the map of where. So, obviously, they offered me, at the time, which was decent money, accommodation and a car if I wanted it.
I mean, what sort of money was it, Dean, in Finland at that time?
Well, we're going back now to 1918. It was 100 quid a week, which was quite, but that was like tax free and
yeah.
I know it doesn't sound a lot.
No,
now,
no, but
in them days it was decent money.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went out there. I done really well. It wasn't a great standard, but I was scoring nearly every game.
I was going to say you did score a lot of goals in Finland.
Yeah, I did score nearly every game. I mean, it was a poor standard, but over there, Vinnie Jones was over there in Sweden, Dennis Wise and Campbell Chapman was out there. Who was Sammy's son, and obviously he's come back and told his dad about me that I'd been scoring goals. But when I did come back, I went to Telford.
Yeah.
And Telford was a really good non-league side. I mean, we were in the what is now the National League, and we were up the top end, and we had a couple of good cup runs. We got to the fourth round of the FA Cup, played Derby County at the baseball ground.
Yeah.
Another 24,000 there watching that. We got beat 3-2.
So, just going back, so you then Upton Park, obviously, you're playing, you know, you want to play at Stamford Bridge. Then you go out to Finland, not a great standard. You can see it slipping away. Then you go to Telford. Then there's a glimmer of hope, and you're obviously playing at the baseball ground, and you think, this is what I want.
Yeah, it's what you want. And I think at the end of the day, it kept me in the game on mentality, because I went through a stage where when I come back from Finland, I didn't have a club for a couple of months. And, you know, I was walking around as if I was still a professional footballer, and I wasn't.
Yeah.
I was basically drawing, you know.
And were you living back at home then?
Yeah, I was living back at my parents' house then. And my dad and my uncle got me one day and said, listen, you know, you're nothing. You're not nothing. You've got to start from the bottom again and work your way up. So I decided to go and play Sunday League again.
No way.
I basically went from Upton Park to Dogshit Park. And that was it. I went and played for my mates down at the local Norfolk Park.
And I've just looked at a statistic. In Finland, you'd scored 42 goals in 38 games. I mean, Pelé had struggled to score that many.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just an unbelievable record at any level.
Yeah.
So, was you as prolific in the Sunday League? Because the problem is there, you go playing in the Sunday League and you're not doing it there all of a sudden.
Well, the first game I played, I think I played for Wolves Sporting for a lad called Eamon O'Neill. A lot of the local people will know him. You know, obviously, I can say it now because the taxman won't get him.
Yeah.
But they used to give us some money to play.
Yeah.
And I always used to win the football card on the Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
So that was my that was my expenses. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So you used to win the football card every week?
Nearly every week.
That's brilliant, dude. Yeah, well done.
Good. I was ever so lucky.
That's the only thing you've ever won, isn't it, Dean? The football card at Wolves Sporting.
Yeah. And the first game we played over Wensfield somewhere, and I played up front with a lad called Dave Butler.
Yeah.
Who, for me, was probably one of the best strikers in Wolverhampton as a schoolboy that anybody's ever seen. Every club in the country was after him. I think his record at Wolves was 25 out of 50 games for the Wolves Central League.
Right.
But he just went. He let himself go. And I played up front with him. And he used to take my position at Wolves schoolboys. He was a big, strong lad. And, you know, he was a year younger than me. And I used to think, so we played up front together.
Yeah.
And I thought, I can't let him score more goals than me. And on the day, I scored 6, he scored 5.
No way.
We won, I think, 12-13-0.
Brilliant.
And then I just thought to myself, you know what? I'm starting again.
Yeah.
And I'll find my level eventually.
And that could have been, it could have been at Telford, it could have been at Rushall, it could have been at Stourbridge.
Could have been anywhere. I mean, you know, you look at Bully, I listened to Bully's story about, you know, he was knocking up beds and things like that. And he was falling asleep on the team coach because he'd done an 8-hour, 9-hour shift at work. And, you know, sometimes players have to realise that, you know, it's all about your mentality. Because I get a lot of lads now, who, you know, the younger lads now, if they get rejected by football clubs, they still drive around as if they're professional Premier League players.
Yeah.
And it's not that case. You've got to go back and find your level. It's going back to basics. It's like anything in life. You go back to basics when it goes wrong. And I did, and from then, sorry.
Oh, no, go on. I was just going to ask, go on, carry on, actually.
Sorry. No, from then, I just sort of seemed to rise back up again. I didn't, as low as I could go. I was playing on, as I said, Dogshit Park, and, you know, it literally was. And then I started rising back up. We had a good couple of runs at Telford. We beat Rochdale, we beat Northampton, we beat Lincoln. We played Everton in the fourth round. And then that was another story, falling out with a manager. Stan Staunton was the manager. And I knew Wolves were interested in me because I'd had a call from Dougie Hope at home.
Saying,
do you want to come and train at the Wolves? Because we'd heard, you know, you'd...
Dougie Hope, here's a name from the past.
I thought, how am I going to get out of this? Thinking, because Stan Staunton was, you know, he was quite a shrewd lad, and you know, but he was unfair. He wasn't fair to me, and the one thing I hate in life is unfairness.
And
he left me out a couple of games, and I said to him, I said, look, I said, if you're not playing me, I'm not playing for you. And he went, well, he says, you've signed a contract now. I said, I don't care what the contract says. So if you ain't playing me, I'm not playing for you.
Yeah.
I was trying my best to get out of it. And I stayed away. I didn't go training for a couple of weeks.
Right.
And he rang me up and he said, look, he said, come in. And he'd get fed up with me then. So.
Yeah.
But I'd got to manoeuvre the move. And the one day I thought, I ain't going to get out of this. So I've gone training. And I just messed around in training. But I know it was unprofessional, but I thought it's the only way I can get out of this. And he called me after training. He said, you can go if you want. He said, I've had enough of you. I said, okay. I said, can I get my release? He went, oh, you'll have to see Mike Faraday, who was the secretary then. So I've shot down his house, got my release forms, went inside for Wolves the next day.
So when you was at Telford, was you working in, did you have any part-time jobs? Because if it was part-time, what were you doing?
Yeah, Telford. I went and worked. I had loads of jobs, you know, just to keep the money coming in, really.
I mean, what were you doing?
I worked at, I got a job at Yale, which was the key.
Yeah,
and
really
I went in there first day, and you've got to go all the locks and I must have spent all week packing these locks, and I've got to lift them up on a pallet and take them through to the girls on the next floor,
yeah,
and putting them into different compartments. And as I've took it on this trolley load, as I've gone along through the door, there was a lip on the door, and I've hit it.
Bang.
Bang. About 3,000 locks have just fell on the floor. Needless to say, only lasted a day, and then the gaffer got rid of me.
And what other jobs?
Where else did I work? I'm just trying to think. I worked at Thompson's, which was on the Ettingshaw Road.
Thompson Chassis?
No, it was the MOD place.
All right.
And the lad was a big football fan.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was really good money. Really good money.
You were tempted not to play football
again.
Yeah,
I was tempted to knock football on the head. I mean, he was calling me in on doing stock takes, and I was taking, some better money than some of the league players. And I used to do that. But you know what? That as well was part of this journey. I used to get there in the morning and meet him there and a few of the other lads, and the chain would go up and you'd hear those gates going up.
Yeah.
And I used to think, what the hell has my life come to? You know.
I had the same conversation with Colin Taylor. So you're at Upton Park, you're playing against Trevor Brooking, Alvin Martin, Billy Bonds. You know, to all intents and purposes, I've had exactly the same chat you've made. Next thing you know, you're dropping locks in a factory in Willinghall. Did you really think then, it's gone or it's going or it's, you know, it must be so, so, so hard to have that dream, to be living it, and then for it to be almost a bubble bursting?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, at the end of the day, I know football, you could be a Sunday League player one day and the next day you're playing in an international for England. That's how football is.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the FA Cup scenarios, you know, you've got somebody going to Man United and playing the FA Cup. You could be playing for Stourbridge and then Stourbridge draw Man United. That's the beauty of football, and that's why everybody loves it, because it's achievable for everybody.
I think it was more, it still is now, but I think back then, I think there was a little bit more opportunity for a Sunday League player to get spotted. It still happens now, but now there's an academy system. There's an education system. They are trying everything to do to keep them in the game.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be many players now, in the top two divisions especially, who are going to work in a factory, a shop, an office, and then coming back into football, you know.
No, but I'll tell you something the other way is that, like, the statistics are that there's 150 ex-players in jail. There's 150 right. ex-players in jail. There's probably 300, 400 with mental health issues.
Yeah.
You know.
Gambling problems. Divorces.
Right? Correct. Well, I think divorces and all that kind of thing has always been about from players in the 50s, 60s, 70s. You know, because your dream's there, and then all of a sudden when your body gives up, everybody has a problem with adjusting to real life.
Yeah.
And the problem is when you're 20, 21, you can adjust.
Yeah.
When you're 30, 31... you can't adjust. You've got to deal with it. And
yeah.
Some people do and some people don't.
I know there was a story, I remember back in the, I think it was the 70s, Dave Clement, Neil Clement's father.
Yeah.
Dave Clement played for QPR. You know, great player. Revered at QPR. And at the end of his career, he did commit suicide.
Yeah.
And that is such a sad story. And it's something, you know, once again, he's playing in front, you know, Loftus Road, 30,000 fans,
yeah,
and all of a sudden, gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not just the football. You know, you obviously, you know, a lot of them have got wives who don't, who are used to the lifestyle. Then all of a sudden, when the money's not coming in, they ain't got the lifestyle. They ain't got the adulation. And, you know, you'll
walk down. They have to find something else to it.
Yeah. It's a very, very, it's what is called a, it's a beautiful game.
Yeah.
But a brutal industry.
Yeah.
You know, and only the fittest survive. And, you know, you see a lot of lads. And I mean, now lads have got more chance to do something in clubs. Like, you know, do the hospitality ambassadors, you know, the punditry, all that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, in them days you didn't. You finished and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, there was no coaching. We didn't have coaches. You know, there was one coach and the manager, that was it. And, and the physio. And you'd have four staff max. But nowadays, you've got 34 staff. You've got an analyst. You've got this. You've got that. You've got a throw-in coach. You've got... It's insane.
A dietitian.
And players can get jobs now, which is, you know...
But you've also got now in-possession coaches and out-of-possession coaches. So when you haven't got the ball, there's a coach. When you haven't got the ball, there's a coach. Yeah. I mean, it's just never-ending.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's up at the higher levels. I mean, I don't think they've got that in the Sunday League.
Well, after the Sunday League, they're out of possession, aren't they? So... Then, 1985, you get your chance. Obviously, your career's on a bit of a roller coaster. Wolves come knocking on the door. Sammy Chapman signed you. Was it Sammy Chapman?
Well, actually, Bill McGarry signed me.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, Bill McGarry, and that was, Bill McGarry was an hero to me. He was a great manager. He was there when Wolves had their greatest period.
Yeah.
Apart from probably now, but, you know, I mean, they were in my days. That he was the guy. And I went to Wolves the first day. I was summoned to go to Castlecroft. I got up, I think, about 5 in the morning. I was doing my stretches from 5 o'clock in the morning and getting myself mentally tuned in to go training. And I turned up at Castlecroft and you got Danny Craney there and Tim Flowers and Andy King and you know, there were some decent players there.
Yeah.
They had some decent players. But you got to remember, in that league then, there was Swansea, Burnley, Cardiff. You know, there were some good teams as well.
Yeah.
And obviously I've gone up to the Castlecroft, trained, and I'll tell you something, I must have ran a marathon in that first training session.
You really want to prove yourself, because this is your boyhood club, you know, it's the dream's back alive.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the thing is, even if I'd have just had that one training session, I've got the Wolves kit on training,
that's it.
And I'm thinking, I've done it now. I don't care if whatever I've done in my life. I've trained on the Castlecroft with the Wolves. Still, I'd been on the Molyneux as a Wolverhampton schoolboy, but I'd never played on there in a proper competitive match. Anyway, obviously the Wolves was in disarray. I mean, there was all kinds of stories going round. The funny thing was that the bonuses were the same as when they were in the first division.
Right.
So it was like £80 a point. It was £80 a point. And
so what money was you on at Wolves then?
Well, this is the thing. I was working at the time as well.
Yeah.
And playing Sunday League. Yeah. And training with Wolves.
Yeah.
And I think they just thought, I don't know what they thought I was doing to get my money to get to the ground. And what it was at Telford, I'd had a signing on fee and I'd bought a Rover 3.5.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that did about 9 gallon to the mile. I had to have some money to put in the petrol to drive to Castlecroft and back.
Yeah.
So I was training with Wolves, played a couple of reserve Central League games for them against Blackpool, and that scored a couple of game goals. And one of my first games was in John Richards' testimonial.
So your legend.
A legend
your
again.
Hero.
I got across this path and I thought, I'm not bothered if I never play another game in my life. I played in King John's testimonial. And... It just seemed to snowball from there. I played, scored a couple of goals against Blackpool in the Central League. We won 2-1. Then we played Derby County. I think it was Derby County or Chesterfield. And I got called up. And he said, you're going to be sub. And bear in mind, I was still playing Sunday League. So we were 4-0 down, I think, to Derby. And he put me on. And I thought I'd done okay. I come on, had a couple of chances. And, you know, I worked hard. Anyway... Next game, I think, was Brentford. We're 4 down again. And I scored. Come on and scored. In the South Bank end.
No way.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking to myself, they've got to give me a contract now. They've got to give me a contract. But I played for Wolves on the Saturday against Brentford.
Yeah.
I've scored. I've got a picture of me holding my arms up to the South Bank. And then on the Sunday, my Sunday league manager's on my front door. Come on, we're playing down Marston's today.
And did you play?
I played. He bought me off at half time.
Did anybody recognise you? Were you playing against?
Yeah, I just dumped it. I think Wolves were in that much of a downfall. I don't think anybody bothered.
John Purdy said he used to walk across West Park to the game and he'd have supporters, you know, asking him what he thought the score was going to be. They thought he was a supporter, didn't they? Yeah. You know, he was a player.
No, they didn't. I mean, that's the disarray Wolves was in. I mean, it was just, it was more like a non-league team at the time, you know, the way it was run. They were surviving.
Yeah.
They were literally surviving. Anyway, on the Pape Express and Star on the Monday, there was a picture of me with my arms aloft to the South Bank and a picture of me trudging off the pitch at Marston's. And Sammy Chapman's called me in and he's gone, what are you playing at?
Oh, so he found out?
Yeah. He said, what are you playing at? I said, what do you mean? I knew what he meant.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean? He said, you can't play Sunday League and play for the Wolves. I said, I know. I said, but they're paying me, you ain't. I said, they're paying me to get the petrol money to come and play for you.
Yeah.
He went, come here, come and sign this contract. So I signed the contract and that was it. I was a fully-fledged Wolves player then.
Wow. I mean, it's stories like that which you just can't believe. And like I said, that your goal-scoring record really, Dean, at Wolves, 10 goals in 30 games, that's 1 in 3. That's a good return for any striker. You must have been pleased.
Well, it was because we were down the bottom four of the league. Muchie partnered me. Muchie came along about 3 games after me, and Mickey Holmes and Purge was there, and you know we had a good side. I mean, Andy King was playing. He got transferred to Luton. He got 10-11 goals at the time. And me and Muchie were scoring every other game. You know, we were really playing well, and I dare say it now because the defence was the problem.
Yeah.
You know, we were losing 5-3.
Yeah.
And 4-2 and stuff like that, and
you know, scoring goals one end, which leaking
them in the other end. And, you know, Tim Flowers, brilliant keeper, good lad as well, Tim. But he was 17 and he was making mistakes. He was just making mistakes.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest with you, at the time, everybody was saying what a good keeper he was. And I thought, this kid ain't ever going to make it. I don't think he's good enough.
Yeah.
And yet everybody was, so proves what I know. You know, and fair play to Tim, he went on and made England appearances and good on him. But at the time, I mean, he was 17 and he was leaking goals left, right. But you can't just blame Tim. I mean, there was, you know, the back four. I mean, even Jeff Palmer, who was a legend at Wolves.
I mean, look, you know, he'd played in both League Cup finals and all of a sudden he'd come back. You know.
It's like when you get to 30, 35, your body goes, your mind goes. He's probably thinking, I've played at Wembley for these in front of 100,000 and now I'm playing in front of 1,500 at Darlington.
Yeah.
You know, his head's bound to go.
Of course.
I remember us going to Darlington and we needed to get a point and it was 1-1 with about 5 minutes to go and he's tried a back pass from the halfway line and he didn't reach Tim and they've nipped in and scored, made it 2-1.
Yeah.
And then he missed a penalty against Rotherham when we were 0-0.
See, that's quite sad, really, because this is a player who's won 2 League Cups for us, and it's not his fault, you know, but like I said, wrong end of his career. He's doing a favour, really, for the club.
Yeah, he was. He was doing a favour, and to be fair, you know, you could never knock Zico because he's top class as a player and a man.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think he'd just come back and, again, and he can't be held responsible either. I mean, there was Ricky Herbert. I think we had Peter Zellum. And obviously my favourite character, Dave Barnes, who we'll come on to later.
All the big guns,
yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's what it was. We went to Lincoln last game of the season, won 3-2, scored in that one. And coming back, I mean, the Wolves fans were phenomenal. They were all on the coach, singing and shouting. And we'd been relegated out the old third into the fourth.
And you got cheered off at Blackpool, didn't you?
Yeah, well, that was a... I mean, it's funny because probably, out of all the games Wolves play and the current fans will have their memories of, you know, games played like Leicester 4-3 and all them kind of games. But I played in 3 games, 2 games at Wolves. One was the Blackpool game away.
Yeah.
There must have been 3,000 or 4,000 Wolves fans go to Blackpool. I think they was playing under the side on the beach before the game.
Brilliant. Did you play?
Well,
did you play in the under side?
I might as well have. I didn't play that well in the game, but I scored the winner. And coming off, I got cheered off the pitch by the fans. They took me to the Wolves end. And,
oh, wow.
And there was an old Wolves fan called Fingles, rest in peace. He's passed away now. But he kept pulling me and going, Dino, give me a shirt. And I thought he wanted it because I'd scored the winner.
Yeah.
I went, you can have me boots. I said, I can't give the shirt away. We've only got 11. And he went, I don't want your boots, said, I need the shirt. But I didn't give it to him. Obviously we went in and the Wolves fans went home happy that day. Yeah. I think they caused chaos in Blackpool.
Yeah.
As they do in most seaside towns.
Yeah. You've obviously just mentioned a player, Dave Barnes. I mean, you've told me this story on numerous occasions. I absolutely love it. So, I mean, he was a character, wasn't he, Dave?
I've never, ever come across any player in my career that is as funny as Dave Barnes. I mean, I think if Wolves would have got rid of me, I'd have been more gutted about leaving him than the team, because he just used to make life funny every day. He'd walk in. I told you the one story. We come back, and I mean, people think this is a bit weird and sick, but it's what he is. Peter Isto came back, the old Wolves player, Peter Isto. He was a legend. He played in the 71 UEFA Cup. He was in the squad.
Yeah.
And he came in and he got dressed, but he got dressed on Dave's peg. And Dave come in. And whenever anybody... We used to try and make people get dressed on his peg. If Dave used to come in 5 minutes to go. And we used to try and make people get there. So we knew Dave would kick off. So he's come in. He's got Peter Eastdale's gear. Threw it in the middle of the changing room. Started to take his tracksuit off. And he's got his Welsh Basque and suspenders on underneath. He was just an absolute mental case, he was. I mean, he used to, you know, he'd grow flowers in the changing rooms. He was just
off the wall.
He was off the wall. I know he got sacked from Ipswich because he nearly killed his landlady. He volleyed one of the balls through with her window when she was doing the tea. He nearly killed her. But the funniest story was, like, obviously, he was one of them lads. If he didn't want to do anything, he wouldn't do it. It wouldn't matter who told him, whether he was playing for England or whoever. And we played West Brom one morning in the winter. It was a game that was called off. And he didn't want to play. It was 11 o'clock kickoff. West Brom had brought their main first team down. We've gone out to play them. And he's chuntering away. I don't want to play in this. I don't want to play in this. So, first minute, he's kicked their winger, Neville Hamilton, who's played for them. I think he was Neville Hamilton. He's kicked him over the touchline, and he's kicked him a good 10 feet over the touchline. And the referee's gone, you, here. And he's walked over to him. He went, violent conduct, off you go, what's your name? And he went, Billy Bandu. The ref's gone, right, Billy, how'd you spell that? And he's gone, Bandu. So the ref's gone, right, Bandu, off. So he's walked off the pitch, like, and 3 minutes gone, possibly. So we you know, the lads are all, even the West Brom lads are laughing because they know he's Dave Barnes. So anyway, we've come off the pitch. Everybody's gone out, we've gone out or whatever we've done. Anyway, in the old days, I don't know if they still do it now, but in the old days, the FA used to send a form through, Dean Edwards, violent conduct, to John Purdy, violent conduct, whoever.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a thing come up and put on the notice board, and it had got Billy Bandu, banned 3 games, violent conduct. So Sammy Chapman's walked in the dressing room, and he's gone to the board, and he's gone, who the fucking hell's Billy Bandu? He says, and the lads are crying because they're, and he didn't, he got away with it. He didn't get
really?
He got away with it. But he was just off the wall and a great character and what a good player as well.
Yeah.
What a good player. I mean, he was part of the team that got him up out of the old fourth and third division. And then I think he went to Aldershot and got them out, promoted as well. But he could have played in the Premiership.
Really?
Yeah, without a doubt. But he was just nuts.
We are going to try and get Billy Bandu on the podcast.
You've got to find him first.
I know. We've both been trying to find him, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're out there, Dave, or anybody knows where Dave is, Dave Barnes, please, please get in touch. We'll come on to, obviously, I love this story, the Roy the Rovers one, and I always refer to it as that. So you left, you left Wolves, you went to Exeter, scored 17 in 54 there. I mean, a great, great goal-scoring ratio. How did you come to leave Wolves, and how hard was it for you to leave your hometown club?
Well, it's funny because the season we got relegated, Brian Little came in, Sammy left, Brian Little came in, and I don't know if Brian really fancied me, to be fair. I think he was lucky to get rid of me, but he couldn't, because when I came back into the team, I think I scored a couple of goals, and he sort of had me back on side again. And then it was right about the November time, I think, and he come in to me and he said, oh, I need a word with you. I said, what's the matter? He said, me and you have got a problem. I said, what's that? He said, I think we'll be leaving here. I said, why? He said, Graham Turner's the new manager. And right. I went, oh, right. I said, okay.
Is this the same Graham Turner
this
that
you... This is the same Graham Turner that I've gone in.
With the next year.
So he's coming and... We played the first, he came in on, I think, the Thursday or the Friday, so I don't think he could change the team. We were playing Swansea away, and we went to Swansea, got beat 2-1, didn't have a particularly good game. The next game, we're sitting on the pitch after training, and he's gone, right, I'm naming the team. He's named the team, I wasn't in it, and he said, the subs are Foreman and Edwards.
Matt Foreman and Neil Edwards?
I thought,
Sorry.
I thought at least he's kept me in the squad.
Right.
And he went, oh, Neil.
I didn't mean to burst you.
No, it's what it was. And I thought, well, I'll twist the knife if you want him. Anyway, I got changed. I went in to see him in the office. I said, look, Graham, I said, it looks like history's repeating itself. I said, if you give me another free transfer, you get to keep me, because that's three. That's a hat-trick of free transfers. Anyway, he sent me out on loan to Sligo Rovers in Ireland for a couple of months.
Oh, yeah, he played in Ireland?
So I went out there, came back, and I went to... he called me and he said, Exeter, won't you? So I went to Exeter. I scored about 5 and 10 for them, and then they gave me a 2-year deal.
Brilliant.
Played against Wolves a couple of times. The Wolves fans went down and wrecked Exeter as well while I was there.
Yeah.
They beat us 4-2. Bully got a trick. Bully had just, yeah, it signed. And I went to Exeter. I thought I'd done well. I scored 13 goals the one season in about 30 games, something like that, 25 games. But that season, I think Bully scored 13 in 1 week. I think he scored 4 against Notts County, 4 against Brentford, and 3 against
someone else.
And another goal against somebody else.
To be honest, Dean, even if you'd have stopped at Wolves at that point, the amount of goals that he used to score and the regularity was just unsurpassed, wasn't it? I mean,
that's what I live for. I want it like any striker. We just want to score goals and get your record as good as you can. But like I said, Wolves. Leaving it was a big wrench, because it's my hometown and
of course
my family's here, and my mates are here, and it was just, but then I thought, I was quite excited. It was Exeter.
Yeah.
I knew it was near the seaside. I thought, well, I'm only 20 minutes from the seaside. I thought, give it a go.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful place Exeter is.
Yeah.
Great facilities. The training ground, I mean, Wolves trained on the car park. Exeter's training ground was like a Premier League. Really? Premier League training ground. And
so it was a step up almost, if you think back then.
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, I went there and they had players such as Nicky Marker, who went to played with Tim Flowers at Blackburn, and Alan Shearer. Yeah. He was the centre-half there at the time. And at one stage, we were top of the league, but like, we got rid of Nicky. The lad Sean Taylor, who was at Bristol City and Swindon.
Centre-half, yeah.
Yeah. So we were doing all right. But then I was there for a couple of years. Terry Cooper came in. And the one day, he'd only watched me play once, and I scored a trick against Darlington. But when he came in, he called me and he said, I don't see you as part of my plans. I said, okay. I said, what'd you see? And he'd done a few underhanded things with me. And then he said, Cyril Knowles wants to speak to you at Torquay.
Peter's so, brother, nice one, Cyril.
Yeah, love, what a top man, absolutely. What a shame he never managed in the Premiership. We lost him at 47 to a brain hemorrhage. What a player, and what a man as well. I mean, proper psychologist. I mean, how he could have got someone like Torquay to Wembley in a playoff place in 2 years with the way they were was phenomenal. And I was in the chat. I was in the room, and I'm sitting there, and Terry Cooper's one side of me, and Cyril Knowles is the other, and I'm thinking, wow, these two England legends here, fighting over my signature, sort of debating on my signature. And Cyril Knowles offered me a 10 grand signing on fee.
Yeah.
And, a good deal on my wages. And Terry Cooper said I could have a free transfer.
Yeah.
So I thought, that's decent deal. So I went to, I said to Cyril, I'm happy to sign. Terry Cooper went out the door, came back in. He said, oh, I've changed my mind. He said, we want 6 grand for you. I mean, wow. £6,000, and so they wanted to take that off my signing on fee. So they didn't. They agreed six and give me five. But, you know, at the end of the day, I lost a lot of respect for Terry.
Of course. So you just wanted to get out of that club.
Just wanted to get out of there. And then I went to Torquay and had the best time of my career, really.
I mean, look, Torquay, we'll touch upon that. You've been a player for Torquay. You've scored at Wembley for Torquay. You've been the manager of Torquay. You've been the commercial manager. You've been the chairman.
Yeah.
You, I mean, you are Mr. Torquay. I know recently it's got a little bit bitter with things, but, you know, what you've done for that club, you are a legend there. I've been in Torquay. We went on a night out. You're doing selfies in nightclubs. It's ridiculous. But you are an absolute legend at Torquay. With regards to, I want to come, these are my favourite stories about the playoff games, but there's also a great story to tell about, obviously, they signed Justin Fashanu, didn't they?
Yeah, I don't know if I could tell this story, really.
No, look, I like the one where he's being interviewed on TV in the fur coat.
Yeah, I've got to be careful about this, because it might come back, and although you can't do nothing to him now, really. I mean, unfortunately, God rest his soul, but there were some unsavoury characters in a pub in Torquay that some of our lads used to frequent. And obviously the lads are down there on a Wednesday when it's a day off, and they've come in with some sheepskin coats saying, oh, we've got some sheepskin coats here. And the lads bought a few and bought them into the dressing rooms, and Fash bought one. And he's bought one, and he's sort of happy with it. He's got it on, it's all fitted. A couple of the lads have bought them. It's freezing cold down there, so everybody's happy. And then on the night, they've interviewed Fash as he's just come down to Torquay, and they put him on the telly, and he's there with his sheepskin on, and how are you, Justin? You know, what do you think about coming to Torquay? And he's at an interview on Spotlight Television. Anyway, and they say after the part's finished, they've gone out. We need to go now to the main news. Last night in there was a break-in in a certain store, and it was just ridiculous. And the two lads who'd sold me, who will remain nameless, they were like absolutely mortified, because they hadn't got a clue what was going on. But that was a story. And then obviously there was another. I can't tell the other one. I just can't.
Look, I mean, Dean, to be fair, you've got a book coming out, which we'll talk about in a minute, which is going to be amazing, and all these stories are more going to be in there. Some of the stories that you've told me, they can be repeated, but you know, I understand. You know, it's sometimes a bit difficult. My favourite one. So, you're at Torquay, you're scoring goals for fun. You then draw Wolves in the
Sherpa van.
The semi-finals. Now, to be fair, Wolves are flying at this point, aren't they? I mean, you know, Bully and Muchie are just scoring, you know, between them 60, 70 goals a season.
Yeah.
They're flying. They come down to Torquay for the first leg. And talk us through it, Dean.
Yeah, I mean, like I say now, I mean, that's the game I always get reminded of when, you know, everybody still now to this day says, oh, you knocked us out at the Cup and blah, blah, blah. And it's probably one of the most memorable games, not for the good, for the Wolves fans, in their history. And like I said, the first leg, we've drawn Wolves and I'm like absolutely ecstatic.
Yeah.
Because I'm not thinking about Wembley. Because I don't think we can beat them. We're fourth or fifth off bottom of the league. Wolves are in the league above. They're you know, like I said, I don't think they've lost at Molineux.
Oh, yeah, because they'd got up from the fourth. They was in the third, that's right. They was top of the third.
They was top of the third.
At a canter.
They were, you know, I mean, they were scoring for fun, Muchie and Bully, like you said. They hadn't lost for 2 years. And they've come down to us, and Cyril Knowles being the master tactician and that. He's told our centre backs we've got to drop as deep as we can to the edge of the box so Bully can't get over the top of us. But he's also got another master plan up his sleeve. He's got Wolves down to Torquay. It's been raining quite heavily. So, in Cyril's wisdom, he calls in the fire brigade.
As you do.
As you do. He floods the pitch. Wolves have got to stay down another day now in Torquay, kicking their heels, boarding hotels, thinking what to do. Ground Turner ain't best pleased, so they've come down. The pitch is like a quagmire the next day, and after half an hour we have our old routine. Mark Lawrham takes a free kick, Matt Elliott flicks it on, and I nod it on the 6-yard box. So we've gone 1-0 up.
Then we score another one, but it's called offside.
And you scored in front of the Torquay fans or the Wolves fans?
Wolves fans.
Yeah. Did you celebrate, Dean?
No, I did, but I had to go run to the Torquay fans. so we got that. We 1-0 up, and I'm thinking, if we go up to Wolves and probably could just hold them one each, you know, we're there.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, bang, bang, Bully. And does what Bully does best. Yeah. And he just smashes two. And I'm thinking, oh, dear me.
Two in the last 5 minutes,
wasn't it? 5 minutes, yeah. And I'm thinking, that's us now. I thought, well, I've scored against the Wolves, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's made me proud. And, you know, that's the end of that now. I'll go and watch Wolves at Wembley. So that's what I'm thinking in my
head. Yeah, yeah.
So we've got up to Molyneux, we turn up at Molyneux, there's 26,000 there. There's only one, I think there's only one side. I think there's only the South Bank open. Oh,
Island. Yeah, South Bank, John Island.
And there's 200 Torquay fans in the corner. Obviously, very optimistic, but yeah. I couldn't see why. But
so you're 2-1 down, so you're now away.
2-1 down, away from home. First half an hour.
Well, actually, you was in the tunnel before, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we was in the tunnel. We was in the tunnel before the game, and we're all lining up ready to go out, and I've gone, come on, lads, we can do this. And Tomo's turned around to me, and he's gone, Dino, what cloud are you on, son? And I thought, okay, well, let's see what happens. So I've scored again. We got into a 1-0 lead. I've jumped over the hoardings and celebrated the Torquay fans. And
brilliant.
24 Wolves fans calling me a
you-know-what. Yeah.
We 1-0 up, so that's 2-2. And then we have another free kick and we score again, it's 3-2. I'm convinced to this day they had Floyd Street out and they had Roger Ansbury in goal.
Yeah.
And I believe if they'd have had
Mark Kendall
in goal
and
Floyd Street had been playing, I don't think we'd have won that game. I mean, Floyd Street...
That's honest of you to say, Dean, but at the end of the day, you've gone there and done the business.
Yeah, we did. I mean... We hit the post and then Bully had one and it's dropped to him just inside the box and has just got the keeper to beat and he's nearly at the corner flag because he's tried to smash the back off it. And I thought, this is our day then. And then just as... the funniest part about it, I mean, we'd run our socks off. I literally had got cramp and they used to have a clock in the corner of the old North Bank.
Yeah.
And it had got 9:10. We kicked off at 7:30. It was the first game after the Hillsborough disaster.
All right.
And it was 9:10. So I've gone to the ref. Ref, come on, can't be long now. And he's looked at the clock and he's gone, that's wrong. It's 10 minutes fast.
Oh, no, I'm going to play another 10 minutes.
So I'm thinking, I've got another 10 minutes. I can't run anymore. I literally can't run. And every time we got the ball, we'd take it into the corner and. You know, you've got Ali Robbo trying to rake his studs down the back of your legs and all that kind of stuff.
Because you're desperate at this point now for the full-time whistle to go because Wolves are the holders of this trophy.
Yeah.
And you think, listen, we're going to Wembley, we've got half a chance here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really believing it now. I'm thinking, please don't score now in the last minute. It'll break my heart.
Yeah.
And then he blew the whistle and everybody went crazy.
So to me, like I said, Roy the Rovers, obviously you've played for your hometown club, you've scored for your hometown club, you then go to Torquay. You score in the home leg for Torquay, you then score in the away leg at Molyneux, you're proving a lot of people wrong, you know, in terms of Graham Turner, etc.
Yeah.
And like you said, on paper, did Torquay have the team to beat Wolves? Probably not.
Yeah.
But you did it, Dean. I mean, that is...
Yeah. Well, again, like I said, you know, I believe then that my life was complete. That's what I wanted to do. If I never done anything again, it would have been, you know, it would have been just a bonus for me. But there was more to come.
You went to Wembley, didn't you, then?
We went to Wembley. There was 50,000 there. Played Bolton Wanderers. Phil Neal was their manager, another legend.
Yeah, Phil Neal.
I'd seen at the Molyneux a few times. And just before the game, I've gone in the tunnel. And the old Wembley was like, I mean, compared to the new Wembley, there's not a comparison. And it used to go up, and then you get to the top of the tunnel, and then you see all the scarves and all the fans And I thought, I've just got to get in the tunnel on my own and compose myself. So I'm in the tunnel, I'm kicking the ball up against the wall. And there was a charity match on before our game.
Yeah.
So the tunnel's got to be about a couple of hundred yards. And I heard this click clop of studs. And I'm kicking the ball and I've looked and I thought of, you know, when you get that sort of moment.
Yeah, I know him.
I know him from somewhere. And he's come walking down the tunnel. And it's George Best.
And it's George Best, and he's come walking towards me, and I'm thinking, oh, I thought it was George Best here. I'm here in a tunnel of me and him on our own. And he came up to me and he went, all right, son. He said, you looking forward to it? I said, yeah. I said, it's going to be a good game. He went, if you can't play out there, he said, hang your boots up. And I thought, well, I ain't going to hang my boots up just yet. And he went off into the dressing room then to get changed. And then I've finished off kicking the ball against the wall, gone in the dressing room. And the lads have disappeared. And I'm thinking, where are the lads? And they're all in the chair watching him. So he's been with three Miss Worlds. He's been with three Miss Worlds. And
so, yeah, George Best, three Miss Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, the lads were just curious to see why he pulled me three Miss Worlds. And it weren't for his football, apparently.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, George Best, legend. So, you know, I met George Best, Brian Kidd, and Bobby Charlton.
Wow.
So, for me, those were three. Because, as I told you, I was a plastic man to start with.
Yeah. And then firmly a Wolves fan.
And then firmly a Wolves, and still a firmly a Wolves fan.
So, after Torquay, obviously, you played at Wembley again, didn't you? Sorry.
Yeah, we went there. We went there again in about 2 years later. We played Blackpool in the final of the playoffs to get us into League yeah. One. It was a good game. It was one of the best games at Wembley, to be fair. We won 5-4 on penalties, and our goalkeeper scored the winner. I took a penalty during the game and scored.
Yeah.
But I came off about 10 minutes to go. I'd run myself into the ground. And to be honest with you, I'm glad I come off, because I'd have had to take another penalty.
Yeah.
And I may have missed.
And you don't want to miss in a shootout, do you?
No, you don't.
We don't want to miss anyway.
You don't want to miss anyway. I mean, the penalty that I had, I mean, I think the goalkeeper got suckered in by the hole when you were a kid, when you used to look in one side of the goal and
yeah.
go the other, and he fell for it, believe it
and
or not.
And he did.
And he did, yeah. But, yeah, it was under the lights at Wembley as well, which was great.
Wow.
So we won 5-4 and got promoted.
So you scored, obviously, goals at Wembley for Torquay. You then went back to Exeter. You then went to Sliema Wanderers in Malta, and then went to Hong Kong. I mean, so your footballs took you to Finland, England, Ireland, Malta, Hong Kong. I mean, you've been all over the world. Have you got any regrets, Dean, about your career? Or, you know, I mean, cause to me, that is a great, great, great career, and we're just so proud that you've played for your hometown club.
Yeah. No, I haven't, because at the end of the day, I think that, you know, when I was a kid, if I put five things in an envelope, one would have been to play on the Molyneux.
Yeah.
Two would have been to score at the Molyneux. Three would have been to play for Wolves, obviously. Four would have been to play at Wembley.
Yeah.
And five would have been to score at Wembley.
And you've done all that?
I've done all that. The only thing I didn't do was score for England at Wembley.
Yeah.
But Bully did it, so
yeah,
that's good enough.
I mean, what from my point of view, that is, what a career. And like I said, I just love the story, because the Roy of the Rovers, you've come back, you know, I really, really do. And you are bringing a I mean, you're still working on it now, because it's obviously, you know, you've got so many great stories. You're bringing out a book, aren't you, Dean?
Yeah, I am. I've got to just make sure that it's all legal and above board, and there's nobody yeah. going to come back and sue me for all the stuff I've worked for all my life.
I was going to say, this is why we've had to edit half the stories, but no. So
I don't think the book had put anybody in any bad light. It's just what it is, and I've always been a big believer in trying to be as truthful as I can.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd challenge anybody to say anything different, and that's what I've tried to be, honest.
Yeah.
And it's stood me in good stead. During my 100%. Life, it's been a tough road, but one that I'd never change, and I don't think anybody would change ever being a professional footballer, whether you played one game or 1,000 games. And the people that I've met during football, and the character that it's given me, you know, I owe my whole life to it, really, football.
Well, Dean, I've got to say, it's been an absolute pleasure to interview. It was one I was personally really, really looking forward to. You are the fourth inductee, or whatever we're going to call them, into our Wolf Whistle podcast. Great stories, Dean. People, you know, will love downloading and listening to this. We're going to get you to sign our Hall of Fame in a minute. You're doing Colin Taylor, or the Wall of Fame. Colin Taylor, Colin Brazier, John Purdy, and now yourself. Thanks, Dean. Great stories, mate. You know, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Pleasure, Jace, and I hope you do well with this. It's a great concept, and I think it's a good one for the Wolves fans to listen to. And I'm sure there's other great stories from some of the legends.
Yeah, thanks, Dean.
Cheers, pal. Cheers.